So as we get ready to look at Joshua chapter 24, I have a question for you. Some of you have blonde hair. Some of you have red hair. Some of you have blue eyes. Some of you have brown eyes. Why is it that you have the particular color eyes that you do? Because of genetics, because you got them from your parents. What else did you get from your parents? Oh, come on. Your name. That's one of the most significant things, actually, that I thought of this week. Your name. You know, you have that the rest of your life, just like your eye color, unless you wear, you know, some sort of contacts. Your name. Well, I guess you can change that, too. But anything else that we get from our parents? Our ethnicity? Hopefully we're getting some wisdom from our parents, as you said, Laura. We get a lot of things from our parents. Tendencies, personality tendencies, and your faith, that goes in there as well. Personality tendencies, that goes back to genetics, right? Any genetic disorders or something like that? A person of faith, I believe we get personality tendencies from our parents, yes. But as a person of faith and scripture, I also believe that a lot of those tendencies, we can choose our personality tendencies. And we may have had angry parents, but that doesn't mean we must be also. And we can learn to grow in those sorts of things. So in some ways, in that regard, I'm a nurture person instead of a nature person. Thank you, Francis Galton. There is a story here. It's not a story, but it is a prayer that Joshua makes right at the end of his life. He's literally going to die. He's already told them that a couple times through this book. But he gives them a message from the Lord, from the Most High, and he is going to challenge them to greater dedication. We have already seen in the book of Joshua that the community wholeheartedly is following God, but he is going to push them even harder. And he begins by telling them this. Joshua chapter 24, beginning in verse 2, it says, Yehoshua said to all the people, "This is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. Long ago, your forefathers, including Terah, the father of Abraham and Nahor, lived beyond the river and worshipped other gods. But I took your father Abraham from the land beyond the river and led him through Canaan and gave him many descendants. I gave him Isaac, and to Isaac I gave Jacob and Esau. I signed the hill country of Seir to Esau. But Jacob and his sons went down to Egypt. Then I sent Moses and Aaron, and I afflicted the Egyptians by what I did to them there, and I brought you out. When I brought out your fathers from Egypt, you came to the sea, and the Egyptians pursued them with chariots and horsemen as far as the Red Sea. But they cried out to the Lord for help, and he put darkness between you and the Egyptians, and he brought the sea over them and covered them. You saw with your own eyes what I did to the Egyptians, then you lived in the desert for a long time. That was his way of summarizing 40 years. You lived in the desert a long time. I love the way that Joshua bounces back and forth, by the way, between pronouns. He talks about what was happening to them. God led them out. And then he'll turn around in the next phrase and say, and you saw what the Lord did. He keeps bouncing back and forth between second person and third person in his pronouns that he's speaking to the people. I just thought I'd point that out. In the past, we've talked about the connections that we have with past generations. Very few, in fact, none of the older adults gathered here before Joshua, and very few of them and none of the young people would have actually been there 60 some years earlier when they came out of Egypt at this point. But yet he's saying, you saw what God did, how God led you out of Egypt. And we've seen this in other places, the connectivity. What God has done for past generations, he has also done for us. God, we think in time and space. Time and space are not as relevant to God. 1,000 years is as a moment in time for him. He is the God from one generation to the next generation. And to him, he can say you and he can say they in the same breath. And I think that's interesting. It encourages me to recognize that I was part of what God did there at bringing Abraham out of idolatry, of bringing Israel out from Egypt. But that's not what I want to talk about. Thanks for letting me take a little tangent there for a second. I want to go back to the very beginning of Joshua's message from God. He says, a long time ago, your fathers, including Terah, the father of Abraham and Nahor, lived beyond the river and worshipped other gods. Your father, Terah. Can somebody name, hopefully this is easy, can somebody name the three patriarchs, the three fathers? Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. In fact, their names came up in the Torah reading that we had. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. But here, Joshua points to somebody named Terah. Somebody named Terah. This guy is Abraham's father. A long time ago, your father, Terah, dwelt on the other side of the river and worshipped other gods. But I called your father Abraham, and he crossed the river, and I led him away. We inherit a lot of things from our parents. You said name, genetics, personality, your name. I said that. I said like your hair, your eye. We are our parents' child. But what if your parents don't have the wisdom that you spoke of, Laura, that you mentioned? What if your parent isn't righteous? There is no one then to teach you wisdom. There is no place where that is going to be obtained. We see in the Via Hafta that you are to love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your resources. You are to... Livavcha with nafshecha, with kol me'odecha, with all your heart, with all your inner being, with all your personality, with all your umph, as my friend David Thompson likes to say. And so what happens if there isn't a parent to talk about these things when you get up and lie down and all those teachable moments that we know of from the Via Hafta? Let me tell you a story. There was a evil, evil king who was a descendant of King David. Could you imagine that? An evil, evil king who was a descendant of King David? Wasn't the Messiah to come from David? But yet, there was an evil, evil king that descended from King David. His name was Manasseh. And he was bad news. He built pagan altars. He put up what is called Asherah poles. They were essentially pagan, outdoor pagan shrines. And he in no way walked with the Most High. He was king of Israel 50 some years, which makes me wonder, God, why on earth do you let the wicked prosper? Why is it that they have long lives? But that's a different discussion. Manasseh ruled for 55 years. His son, Amon, became king when Manasseh died. He only ruled for 2 years, and there was a coup of his own internal court that rose up, overthrew him, and killed him. And now that Manasseh is dead, and his son that was 20-something is dead, now the only person left to be king, because, by the way, in Judah, it was a direct line of descendants, directly generation by generation from David. In the northern 10 tribes, there were a variety of dynasties that were established that might rule for 3 or 4 generations, and then there would be a different family that would come in and rule. But in Judah, it was a direct line for about nearly 500 years that ruled. And so when Amon died as in his mid-20s, all that was left is a young guy, 8 years old. Just 8, Jackson. And that's even younger than you. And his name was Josiah. Josiah. What was this kid, this little guy, going to do? He was a descendant of David, but he certainly didn't have the upbringing of righteousness. He certainly didn't have someone to teach him wisdom. There was nothing of when you get down and when you rise up in the morning and the evening and when you walk along the road or when you drive down the interstate. There was none of that for Josiah. How was he going to learn to love the Lord with all his heart, with all his soul, with all his resources? It's an amazing story. You'll find it in 2 Kings chapter 22 and 23. In a sad way, he only ruled for, much shorter than his grandfather, who ruled 55 years. In fact, believe it or not, this good king, Josiah, ends up being killed in battle by the Egyptian Pharaoh. Why do the righteous suffer? Well, that's a different topic. So Josiah tore down, cut down the Asherah poles. he instigated Passover. In fact, 2 Kings tells us that Passover had not been observed since the days of before the days of the judges. Remember in Joshua, back in Joshua chapter 5, when Israel enters across the Jordan River, they've been in the wilderness for 40 years, and they cross in, all the adult males are circumcised because evidently none of the Jewish men, as they wandered through the wilderness, had been circumcised in those 40 years. So all the men are circumcised, and then they observe Passover. They enter into the land of their inheritance on Passover. How appropriate. Isn't that what Passover is? Passover is not only I'm going to bring you out, but it's also I'm going to take you in. And so they observe Passover. But according to 2 Kings, Passover had not been observed since then. Even David. Wow. No Passover for hundreds of years. Hundreds and hundreds of years. But Josiah starts observing Passover. He found, some of his men find a book of scriptures in the temple, a scroll. We're not told exactly what it is. If you want to make a name for yourself, you can figure out what that might have been and you can be famous. But some say perhaps it was the book of Deuteronomy. Some say it was other things that was found in the temple. It's amazing. Somebody finds an old scroll of God's words. No wonder we had been so off track. There was a famine for hearing the words of the Lord. The Josiah learns how to follow the Most High. His father didn't teach him. His grandfather, Manasseh, is recorded to be the most wicked king that Judah ever had. In fact, the reason for the exile for 70 years in Babylon was a personal punishment because of what Manasseh had done. But in the midst of this unhealthy, at best, we'll call it, in this unhealthy environment, Josiah grows into being the best king that Judah ever had. Not only that, in the Via Hafta, we say that we should love the Lord with our, can you name them? Our heart, soul, and our resources, our ne'od, our umph, our strength, our resources. Did you know that those three things, those three words put together, are repeated only one other time in Scripture? Only one other time does it say someone loved the Lord with all their heart, soul, and resources. I mean, in Deuteronomy, we say it every Shabbat. Love the Lord with all your heart, soul, with all that you have, with all your strength. But only once after that, ever, in Scripture, are those three words used. Only once in all of Scripture does it say that someone actually loved the Lord with all their heart, soul, with their me'od. And it's not even King David. It's Josiah. The king who rose from an environment that was, unhealthy at best. An environment that was godless. An environment that was evil and pagan. That went after strange gods. Josiah. We need to do a study on him someday. I just use him as an example because Abraham was a lot like Josiah. Abraham grew up in a idol-worshipping pagan home. Abraham grew up in a home that not only worshipped idols, was pagan and idolatrous, but according to Jewish tradition, Terah was even an idol maker. He was a craftsman. Remember those phrases about those who have images that have mouths but can't speak, eyes that can't see. That was the home that Abraham grew up in, just like Josiah would have grown up in. I believe, and it's beyond actually the scope of the current discussion, but I believe that God wanted to take Terah out of that environment. In fact, here in Joshua 24, he gets highlighted. Long ago, your fathers, including Terah, the father of Abraham, lived beyond the river. But then that really sad line, and worshipped other gods. If we go back to the book of Genesis, and I don't have time at this moment to lay this out. It will have to happen at another setting. If we go back to the book of Genesis, 10 times in the book of Genesis, it says this is the story of someone. Toldot Adam, Genesis chapter 5. This is the story of Adam. In Genesis chapter 6, it says this is Toldot Noach. This is the generations or the story of Noach. Later it says this is the Toldot Shem, the generations of Shem. This is the Toldot Yishmael. This is the Toldot Yaakov and Toldot Yitzchak, Genesis chapter 25. 10 times in Genesis, it lays out, this is the story of so-and-so. And then it proceeds for the next several chapters, or sometimes shorter, to talk about their genealogy, to talk about their stories. There are some scholars that believe that this is a way to see the structure of the book of Genesis, to see this as 10 stories that each one begin with this phrase, Toldot, and then the name of the person. It's interesting to me that it never says these are the generations of Abraham. This is the story of Abraham. In fact, rather in Genesis chapter 11, verse 27, it says, this is the Toldot Terah. This is the generations. This is the story of Terah, who lived beyond the river in Ur, but he set out to go to Canaan. He set out to go to Canaan. He set out to go to the land of promise, but it says when he reached Haran, he settled there. He didn't complete the journey. Haran is the place of crossroads, and I don't have the time to explain that, but it was a centralized location, the crossroads of northern Mesopotamia, in that area. But when he reached that point, he didn't continue any further. So the text goes on in Genesis to say, and so God called Abraham and saying, leave your home, your land, your father's house. Leave that influence, that paganism, that idolatry. Those things that are not righteous. And go to a land I'll show you. God took him to Canaan. It is due to these reasons and several others beyond the present context, I believe that Terah should have been the first patriarch. God called him to go to Canaan, to leave his idolatry, his idol-making ways, and to take his family and follow the Most High. He didn't. How was Abraham able to take a journey that his father had been unable to take? Terah wanted to go to Canaan. Abraham left, even before his father died, left his father to follow God. How was he able to do it? It's the same question with Josiah. How was Josiah able to walk a path when his grandfather got absolutely the worst press from God of any king ever? How do we walk the path when we've not had someone to teach us what it means to love the Lord with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your resources? There needs to be a new relationship. The Lord is your teacher. The Lord is your guide. The Lord is your peace. The Lord is the one to bring strength and stability when there's been a life of only instability. When the fathers have been evil, there is a listening to the Kol Adonai, the voice of the Lord. It came to Avram and it said, leave your father's house and go to a land I will show you. And I will make you a great nation. I will bless you. I will make your name great. You will be a blessing. Over and over through the Abraham story, God had to teach Abraham how to be righteous. God came to Abraham and said, I am your reward. I am your shield. I am your exceeding great reward. Here is what it means to walk after me. When there is no one to teach, when there is no father to carry in the arms, we have the Most High, who tells us that he lifts us up in his right hand. In last week's Torah portion, in the opening verses of Deuteronomy, we're told that God carried Israel out of Egypt like a father carries a son in his arms. When there is no father, the Lord is the one that lifts you up and carries you and places you in his hand. He is the one that embraces you. He is the one that encourages you. He is the one that teaches you. Listen to Isaiah chapter 54. Isaiah 54, verse beginning with verse 11, says, speaking to Israel, Jerusalem, it says, O afflicted city, lashed by storms and not comforted, I will build you with stones of turquoise and your foundation with sapphires. I will make your battlements of rubies, your gates of sparkling jewels, and all your walls of precious stones. And they could have said, what walls? There are no walls. There is no beauty. There is no comfort. Who can build anything from this mess? The past has been sorrow. The past has been brokenness. The past have been evil influences, like Manasseh was for Josiah, or Terah was for Abraham. I think it's beautiful that God answers that question in the next verse. Verse 13 says, "All your children will be taught by the Lord." All your children will be taught by the Lord. The Lord is our moreh. The Lord is our teacher. He is our guide. All your children will be taught by the Lord, and great will be your children's peace. That's Isaiah 54, verse 13. 54, 13. All your children will be taught by the Lord. Speaking to a city that is said to be afflicted, lashed by storms, beaten down, crushed, not comforted. The Lord was the one that spoke into Avram's life and said, "I am your exceeding great reward. I am your shield," Genesis chapter 15. I will be the one to lead you as you walk after me, as I teach you what it means to be righteous. So when Joshua begins his final speech before he dies, he says, "A long time ago, your father Terah lived on the other side of the river, but he worshipped other gods. So the Lord led Abraham out." The Lord led Abraham out. Be encouraged. The Lord understands, sees, and knows the detriments, the holes, the gaps that each one of us see in our lives, in our personalities, in our reactions, our tendencies, the gaps in our strength. From the lack of teachers in the right way. Isaiah 54, the Lord will be your teacher. The Lord will lead you out.